you can host the best backyard barbecue. When you find a professional on Angie to make your backyard the best around. Connect with skilled professionals to get all your home projects done well. Inside to outside, repairs to renovations. Get started on the Angie app or visit Angie.com today. You can do this when you Angie that.
Welcome to episode 12 of the Golf Advisor Podcast. I'm senior writer Tim Gavrich. Our editor-at-large, Matt Janella, is back in Morocco, a country with an intriguing and growing golf scene. Matt's latest interview subject is a key figure in the history of sports in Morocco, Nawal El Moutawakil. In Los Angeles in 1984, Ms. El Moutawakil made history, both for her home country and the Olympic Games. She won the first-ever gold medal in the women's 400-meter hurdles event. She also became the first-ever female gold medal winner from a Muslim-majority country. In the 35 years since that triumph, she has preached the power of sport as a key component of a fulfilling life, especially for young women. And since 1998, she's been a member of the International Olympic Committee. Full disclosure here, there's some golf talk in this episode, but not a lot. It's a conversation with an important and interesting person that you'll be glad to have learned about. Enjoy.
First of all, quite an honor to be with you right now. Thank you for taking this time.
It's my honor to be with you in your very famous show.
I'm sitting with a gold medal winner. That's an amazing accomplishment, obviously, to say the least. Take me back to 1984, Los Angeles Olympics. Tell me, in your words, what it was like for you, that moment, that right before the gun goes off.
Only beautiful memories, memories that will stay with me for the rest of my life, forever. And with each and every Moroccan, it was a unique opportunity, not only for myself, but for the rest of the Muslim community and Arab community and Africa as a whole. I came from nowhere, and I call it 54 seconds, which for me is a school of life. It brought me from zero to hero, from dark to light, from nobody to somebody, and that I will cherish for the rest of my life. It's good for me, but it's also good for the Moroccan women, Arab women, for the youth of my country, and for those who want to dream, and dream is allowed, and for me it allowed me to be what I am today. And the race, the 400 hurdles, like I said, is a school of life because it teaches you so many things. It has hurdles, and each time you learn to overcome each at a time, you fall down, and that means that in life there are also failures, not only successes. And this is what I'm using for my daily life and with my kids, with the youth of my country again, and all those who try to reach me because I believe in teaching and reaching. And so, yes, it was a beautiful dream that was accomplished and achieved. Difficult, not easy, and easier at the same time, because if you believe in yourself and if you have a high self-esteem, if you are very well surrounded by your family, friends, coaches, teachers, because after all, it's a teamwork, and then you can achieve your goals in life. So those 54 seconds, 54, 60, 100ths of a second, that's all it took me. But it's many years of dedication, hard work, day and night, winter, summer, away from my family, sometimes without knowing and understanding what other people were talking to me, because I lived in the States. When I landed there, I didn't really have any notion about the American way of life, anything about, nothing about the language. And, you know, those were the hurdles of life. But then afterwards, you learn to become strong than ever before. Stronger women. You learn to fight. You learn to speak up, to stand up. And I think this is what brought me to the level I am today. Because I think without those 54 seconds, I don't think my life would be like what it is today. And I'm trying to bring with me all these women who sometimes are having some low self-esteem, not really believing in themselves. And I speak to them about the beginning of my career as a young athlete, you know, a young little Moroccan, five nine, you know, 47 kilos, trying to dream big and reach high and aim high in Los Angeles at the Coliseum with Judy Brown from United States and Juku Caru from Romania and the Swedish Anna Louise Skoglund and the Indian P.T. Usha. And here I am from Morocco trying to find a place and a seat with all, I don't know how many, 80,000 spectators in L.A. Millions watching at that time, a large audience, TV audience, and all of a sudden here, this Muslim, little tiny Muslim, Moroccan, African who is saying, hey, I'm here, I exist. And it was so funny because the TV commentator then could not even pronounce myself or could not even, you know, understand where I came from because, you know, having a young girl coming from Morocco to dare to compete and beat Americans and beat all those, yes, you know, but it was my time, it was my event, it was my moment to shine. So I grabbed it with all my strength. I said, I'm not going to let you go. You're mine. So
I got chills. I got chills.
So it was so funny, but yes, but celebrity ends moments afterwards. You know, you can live from it, you know, few months, few years, but then you come down to reality. You have to give back to society, to your community. And so I decided to, you know, retire at a very young age, 24, to do something else with my life. And this is how I started reaching out to other communities in Morocco and elsewhere to speak about my interesting experience, because it is an interesting one, to learn not to give up and to try to push yourself as hard as you can to reach your goals. And from the timid young athlete from Casablanca, I became a speaker here and there to share my experience with others. Until I reached, a level where I became a member of many international organizations like the International Olympic Committee and the International Athletic Federation, and became twice a minister under two governments and then under two kings, His late Majesty Hassan II and our today's King Mohammed VI. Both believed in my capacity, and I kind of run the Department of Sports and Youth in our country, and today I'm a MP in the Parliament. So all those combined, I don't think they happened by surprise. I strongly believe in hard work, so it's 99% of hard work and maybe 1% of chance. I was not placed there because I'm a woman, because somewhere, somehow, there is a hard work. So I'm strongly a believer of a person that needs to push barriers and walls to find the place that is place needs to be owned by women. Our society here in Morocco also believes in the place of women, but you have to also be present 100%, sometimes 1,000%. To prove that you're also capable of being part of this society. Our king and our constitution is giving all the possibilities for women to earn what they have learned, because it belongs to them, and it's up to them to really merit the position. And today, than ever before, you see women being a pilot, not only an MP, you see a woman being also university professors and a doctor, and you name it. The list is long of positions taken by women. I opened up my eyes seeing my mom being a banker back in the 50s and 60s, which was then unusual. So for me, it was just normal to be in a family where a father used to be a judo player and a mom a volleyball player, and all five brothers and sisters in track and field. It was just normal.
Many women, not only Moroccan women, Muslim women, women around the world, any woman would be inspired by you. Your inspiration was your mother.
Yes. Very much so. She was a volleyball player. She was a banker. Very open-minded. She still is today. She used to come to the stadium with my dad to carry my backpack and with some juices and stuff like that to help me train, and at the same time tell me, hey, I am here with you. So no worries. Your parents are here. So go. You're free to choose your sport. And we trust you, we want you to reach the highest level in track and field. And I recall my dad always telling me, remember that the best gifts come in small packages. Because I was always complaining about how short I was and how little I was. And yet I have chosen a hurdles that were almost half of my height. And he would always tell me, I believe in you and I think you will become a star. But you just have to, just easy. You cannot go from point A to point B within overnight, but you have to take the time to be patient and you can reach your goals. When you have the trust of your family, and when there is no discrimination within the family, because I was like my brothers, boys and girls, we would play football, we would run together, and no discrimination, no segregation or what so forth. And when you have the trust of your family, the trust of your surrounding, of your environment, and I think there can be no limits. Only the sky can be high. And I was pushed by also my other coach, who was Jean-François Coquan, my French coach, who advised me to change from sprint event to the hurdle events, because the hurdle events were only run by men for so many years. Because women then were not in the Olympic program until 1984. So my race was the very first ever event for women, and so was the marathon for women. Because the founder of the Olympic Games, the Baron Pierre de Coubertin, back in the last century, believed that women's place was not in the stadium. And if somehow they had to compete, some event needed to be limited in distance, because women did not have the physical capacity to overcome some type of sports and some type of events. Today, you see it's different. The International Olympic Committee is aware of the presence of women in the field of play, also in the leadership in sports, and you see them today everywhere. Mm-hmm. In the Olympic Games, the recent ones in London 2012 and Rio 2016, every international federation presented the women. Mm-hmm. Every sport had to have a woman, otherwise that international sport could have been excluded. You see them from boxing to wrestling, from football to track and field, from fencing to gymnastics to swimming, all.
Golf?
Even golf. Golf was accepted in 2016 Rio Olympic Games after 112 years of absence in the Olympic program. But for the golf to return as an Olympic sport, they had to have women. And here, I am very happy to announce that for our national team, we chose Maha Haddiwi to represent our golfer, and she was the only female. So it reminded me, Nawal, myself in 1984, when I was the only female in a men's team. The difference is that Maha El Haddiwi was in a mixed team, you know, the entire national team had men and women, but in golf she was the only woman. So from one woman in 1984 to nearly 40% women in the Rio 2016 Olympic Games, somewhere you can tell that there is a huge progress within our sport in our country. And I'm happy to see golf coming back at the Olympic program and to have Maha El Haddiwi representing us.
Have you ever spoken to Maha?
I love her.
Yeah.
She's my hero. I like her.
She's amazing. We got a chance to spend time with her. She was appeared on our program, and I've kept in touch with her, and she taught me about the experience of being around all the athletes and how that inspired her to change her mindset in terms of how she looks at her own body and her own discipline, and truly an inspiration, obviously. And you know, someone like yourself paved the way for someone like herself, which is, and then you know what comes after, only time will tell. I have so many questions, so bear with me for a second. But the reality and the words that come with the first African-born Muslim to win a medal. What, to this day, when you hear that, does that just hit you in the soul of who you are and what you represent?
When I competed in 1984, for me, it was me.
You weren't processing the enormity of the situation, weight of your world?
No, I was not. No. I had no clue, no idea. I was just running for the joy of competing, of running. I missed the 1980 Olympic Games, but I said this was my chance in 1984. LA was my time. It was my moment. I had won every single race in the States, and also some of them in Europe. In the States, I beat every single champion in the NCAA, in the Big Eight competitions, and you know, in Minneapolis, Missouri, and Drake relays.
In that starting line, as you are taking, you know, you taking your position, had you already beaten every single woman that you were racing against that day?
Some I have beaten. Some they won some races. But then you talk to yourself, you said, this is my moment. And with my coaches, Ron Rinko and Pat Monahan, both Americans at my university, Iowa State University, they came to the Olympic Village and they said to me, we need to rehearse tomorrow's race. I said, why would we rehearse tomorrow and we're today? They said, because we believe you are going to be the winner. I said, no. My parents taught me to do one step at a time. So let's leave the moment now. And we were looking over the tapes, the races of every heat and my race, and studying every mistake I was making and the mistakes of the others. And they saw that I had little advantage compared to the others. He said, in terms of flexibility, the way technically you're much better and you might win tomorrow. So now we want you to stand on top of a chair and be proud of yourself and imagine that the chair is your podium tomorrow. So we want you now to sing the Moroccan anthem. I said, no, I cannot do that because I prefer to wait until tomorrow. And this was the night before the final race. And they pushed me to my limits and they said, we want you to sing your Moroccan anthem. Not only that, we want you to say out loud that you're number one and that you're the best and that you will win because you must win, because you have to win, because you are a winner. And can you say that again? And from where I come from my culture, I couldn't be saying that. So you learn when you're growing up to look down.
You never did it?
No, never. because it's not part of my culture.
You did it the next day when it really mattered.
No, no, I did it on top of the podium. Yeah, yeah. I finally did it. We were just the two of my coaches, myself, in a one room.
Yeah.
And it was called the meditation room in the Coliseum. I'm sorry, at the Olympic Village. So we had this room that was made for teams, and where you could go with your coach and just look over the tapes, the races, the semi-final, the prelim semi-final, and then before reaching the final, you could sit in that room and meditate with your coaches and try to rehearse so many things so that you are, in an O zone where you can really be lift up and think that you really is the best. So after talking over and over, they really made me feel very strong. And the following day, when I was at the starting block, I was in a very, I'm speaking about the final now. Mm. I was in a very good couloir.
Position.
Come on, deep couloir.
Lane,
yes, sorry. I was in a very good lane, number three. The bib number was 272. And then you learn to be on your own. Because for many days, for many weeks, for many months, for many hours, you are with your dad, with your family, with your team, with your coach. But that specific moment, you are dropped in the stadium. You're alone. You're alone.
Is it quiet?
It's very noisy. It's 80,000 spectators when you see all those cameras around you. But you learn to be in your own world where you try to rehearse in your mind. So you are mentally strong, physically tough, and you have only one chance in your life. You either go like a Sirocco, jump the first hurdle, but keep telling yourself that you still have another hurdle after another hurdle. So it's 10 all together. And believe me, the last hurdle looks like a mountain because at the end you're tired. You have acid lactic pulling you down, but you have your pride pulling you up, telling you you have to go because there are millions watching you. Don't let them down. And so reaching the finish line, I kind of felt sorry because I thought I was so concentrated on my own thing that I thought I made a false start. And there was already a first false start made, and I thought it was me, but it was not me, it was someone else. So I said, I'm glad it's not me, because once you do a false start, it just messes up all your ideas, and then you lose momentum, you lose concentration, and you don't want that to happen because you really want to be fit, you want to be strong, you want to be like a bullet. And so reaching the finish line, I kind of slowed down because I felt sorry for my, I don't call them enemies. They are my competitors and I like them. They were all my friends. So I kind of turned left, right and left, and I see them far and I slow down. I slow down because I really liked all of us to reach because it's everybody's dream. I said, come on, you cannot just do that to yourself and be the only owner of the gold. Mm. So we, of course, at the finish line, we cried, we laughed, and I couldn't believe it. I was so lost in translation, lost in my mind, and so I had to reach. Yes. I've kind of said lost in translation, like the movie.
Yeah, I know.
I kind of went to see the Moroccan team that was in the stands. They called me, like they said, come over. So I came over. They said, this is the Olympic flag. Why don't you carry it and carry the Olympic flag and go for a tour, a victory ceremony, a victory tour.
Lap.
Go for a victory lap. And I'm like, what for? They said, you just won. I said, you sure it was me? Because I felt we were all together. I said, no, it's you won. You have to go around with the... And so from there, my life totally changed because then
You were 22 at the time? Or
21, 22. So I had left Morocco 8 months before the Olympic Games.
So you had left Iowa State, and you had left, and you were back in Morocco, and then you left Morocco to go to the Olympics. You had finished Iowa State.
No. I left Morocco to go to Ames, Iowa.
Yeah.
Iowa State University. Only 8 months before of the game.
Oh wow!
My entire career was in Morocco. Yes.
Wow.
My entire career was in Morocco, and then I was asked to travel to the States, offered scholarship, and which I accepted. I accepted also to live in the snow, which I've never seen before in my life. Didn't speak the language. It was very difficult.
Why Iowa State?
Because I was offered an opportunity for me to travel somewhere, to discover another culture, to prepare for the games. And I needed
They were the first college to offer you a scholarship.
Yes, but there were many others.
And you chose Iowa State. The first one came in, you're like, bomb.
Yes.
And then comes Florida and Texas and
many other universities, yeah. Many other American universities.
You had already committed to Iowa State.
Yes. So and under NCAA rules, I guess once you sign with the first one, the other ones need to give up. And I guess I don't regret anything because I really find it interesting because I had a and since even today I have my other American family there, the Avon family, with whom I'm still in a good relationship and in touch, and the professors, the dean of university, and I had the leather jacket, and I've been inducted in the Hall of Fame. I'm proud of Ames, Iowa. I'm proud of ISU. Go Cyclone. Cyclone.
Where's the gold medal?
It's in my home. And for a long time, my two coaches, Ron Rinko and Pat Monahan, who unfortunately passed away in 85 in a plane crash. I was a team captain. I didn't travel with the team at that time. They used to carry my gold medal, and we used to go to high schools, to nursing homes, to many places to speak about how important to use the power of sport because it changes your life, and talk about my experience and so forth. But this suddenly disappeared. My entire team died in a plane crash. And for me, it was so devastating. And this is why I stopped at the age of 24, because I had enough. And a year before my coaches passed away, my dad passed away a week after I went to the States. So I left on Saturday. He passed away the following Saturday. And for him, it was very important to see his daughter go somewhere else and discover something different. And when I learned it was like 3 months later. No one told me my dad passed away because they really wanted to protect me. And they said, he's passed away, he's buried now, he wants you to fulfill his dreams. So all this combined really made me reconsider everything. So I stopped competing at a very young age, at the age of 24, to do something else with my life and with myself.
Were you supposed to be on that plane?
No, because I'm not cross-country runner. I'm a sprint runner and a hurdler. So the only cross-country team was on the plane. Mm. And it was a very sad event for the entire university. So I had to change coaches and be mentally strong. But that really ended my entire athletic career. And I wanted to be the spokesperson of women's, of all those who would like to be into the sports within my university and elsewhere and in Morocco and also in elsewhere. For me, it was very devastating, very devastating.
You go from the podium to using that medal and that 54 seconds and that moment to a platform, being able to help others, like you say. Of all the things, other than winning that medal, of all the things that you've been involved in and of all the the people you may have impacted, what are you most proud of other than that moment in which you win the gold medal?
I'm proud of all the women that really believed in the power of sports, because after I retire, I got married, I have two children and a wonderful husband. But then I got bored very quick and I wanted to be doing something else. As someone that is very hyper, I wanted to keep keeping the momentum of moving around, and I came up with this, with hosting or organizing the Casablanca women's race called the Run for Fun. So at the beginning, everyone thought I was kind of, you know, going, you know, crazy, because how could you bring a Moroccan woman running in the streets of Casablanca, a metropolitan city that that is vibrant and with a lot of cars, and how could you bring women in the streets to run? So from few hundreds, within 10 years, we reached 30,000 women, all from all kind of walks, running in Casablanca. And so we had all kind of TV channels from all corners of the planet to come and film these women that are mixing between religion and modernity, showing the world that they can be a mom, wives and sisters and grandma, but yet open-minded to come and discover the beauty and the joy of racing and competing together. It was not a race for excellence, but a race for to understand the power one more time.
Solidarity.
Of yes, between women and so forth. So this, for me, was one beautiful memory of the things that pushed me to keep that spirit of sharing and of caring. And this is what I keep doing even today. We go to high mountains, we go to the desert, we go to prisons, to orphanage, you name it. Everywhere where I can speak, speak up, like I said at the beginning, about sports and its beauty, I do it. I do it with love, with passion. And when there is passion and love, I don't think you can, there is no limit. So.
What do we need to know about Morocco that you're most proud of? What do we need to know about, for the North American tourist, for the North American who might think they know all there is to know about the world that we live in, but might not know exactly what we need to know about Morocco? What is it?
You have been here for so many days, and like I said, you're a celebrity. You're known here more than anywhere else, and you are a good ambassador for our country to show that it's a country of peace, of solidarity, that is open on itself and on its environment. We have a king that is pushing it forward to show the world that Morocco is a place where you can be living in a peaceful way. It's blooming.
It is a melting pot,
it's
right?
A melting pot. It's a blooming in terms of economy. I've been speaking to you about women, the youth. Yet we have problems with education, with health, with employment. We're working on all those subjects, just like in every country, in the States, in Europe. But I'm proud to be in Morocco. I'm proud to be Moroccan. I chose to come back to Morocco, where I had to choice to stay in Iowa and in the States. So I was offered many opportunities to also live in France. And United States, but I chose to return back to my country, home sweet home. So I feel fine, feel happy, and so I hope it's the same for you and for all those who are watching us to come and see how it is here.
When you win the gold, did you get a phone call from His Royal Majesty, His Majesty the King Hassan II? Did you get a letter? Do you remember any kind of form of communication?
I got a first a contact between the late King Hassan II, when we were in Casablanca a night before we left to LA, 1984, wishing us good luck in his palace, and he looked around. And all he could see is a delegation full of men. But he could see a tiny lady really in the back there. And when he was delivering the speech, I thought he was talking to me the whole time. He said, not only I want to wish you good luck, but I'm a strong believer that one of you, or one of you, because he said it in a feminine, l'un de vous ou l'une parmi vous. When he said it in feminine, you know, I thought he was looking at me and he was addressing his speech to me. So from that moment until we traveled the following day, reaching the Olympic village in LA and going to the Coliseum, the entire period of time, his words were resounding in my mind and in my spirit. And every night, every day, I had in my deep sleep listening again to his words. And because he seemed like he was talking to me and telling me, you should bring the gold. Because that's what he said. He said, I'm sure one of you will bring the gold to this country of Morocco. So I had every single one in the Moroccan delegation coming to me and telling me, we think he was talking to you, because he said you might, so you better, he was talking to you. So
don't let the king down.
So after I won, after the competition, of course, I went with the flag around the stadium. But then right afterwards, you have a doctor coming to you and two nurses or three to ask you for a doping control. And you have to do it systematically less than an hour after your race and before you go to the podium. And at that same moment, when I was doing my victory lap and when the doctor was following me, jogging behind me where I was carrying the flag, and then another fourth person came to me to tell me the king of Morocco wants to speak to you on the phone. And I'm like, you must be making a mistake, because I don't think he would be watching TV now because it's too late in Morocco. And they said, no, you have to come. And then you had these phones with a long cord. And so they were coming to me with this phone. And I'm like, are you serious? You're serious about what you're saying? I said, yes. So I grabbed the phone and Judy Brown was next to me, the American one. She goes, well, if the king of Morocco is calling me, I think Ronald Reagan will call me too, because I came second. So I think every head of state needs to call all the champions, number one, two, and three. But he had said very, very kind and nice words to me, how proud he was and how happy to see me winning and to see the Moroccan flag, and how impressed he was by my race, because it was a highly technical event. And so all I was doing is cry, because I cried because the words were very strong, and coming from a king, it was for me a unique event in my life. You know, when you're only 21, 22, and you get all that, you know, winning at the games and getting the gold, and at the Coliseum, 90,000 or 80,000 spectators, all TV of the world, your king calling you, all that together was too much for me, too much. And then thinking of your dad that passed away, that was with you your entire life, pushing you, carrying your bag and giving you advices, and but not being with you at the moment of your fame and glory. He disappeared. And most of all that, on top of all that, there was a press conference waiting for me. Nobody told me that I would have a press conference. I've never done press conference in my life. All what I have done is run and run and run. I raced, I went over the hurdles. I was prepared physically and also mentally, but no one told me once when you win or if you win, you might have a press conference. So I had hundreds and thousands of mics, of, you know, journalists from all over the globe wanting to speak to me. And I'm like, no, I have nothing to say. You know, I'm just happy. I'm happy. I'm speechless.
And at that point, was it starting to sink in that something you had accomplished might have been a lot bigger than, yes, simply something for your family, something for, you know, your king, something for your dad, something for yourself, that this was something that was much bigger than you could have ever possibly imagined.
You summed up everything, yes. I was caught in so many things and elevated in a level that I was not expecting. And
are you still riding that wave? Are you still processing? Are you still...
No, you digest after so many years, because all that fade away and disappears after a few months and years.
But I mean, are you still overwhelmed by the power and potential of what you can accomplish from that moment going forward? I mean, credit to you, because, you know, in some ways, in some athletes, they can go a lot of different directions. That fame or that pressure or that popularity or that enormity of the situation can be too much, and
yes,
it can ruin them. It can go, you know, yes, they can go a lot of different directions. And for you, you decided this is not, I'm going to keep running, essentially. You hit the finish line, which in a sense became the start line for all that you're trying to accomplish day in and day out to this day. Is that you know, that is, in that sense, that's what I mean. Are you still running, mm-hmm, in a way?
Yeah, I always believed in the power of sports and what it gave me. What sports gave me, no matter how much I give back, it's never enough.
Yeah. It opened up. Yes. You just see the next hurdle. You just, yes, keep seeing the next hurdle.
It opened up a wide horizon for me. It opened up a highway of opportunities, and it's up to me to grab them. And those opportunities is to use my fame and glory, my performance, my gold medal, my achievement to the service of the youth in Morocco and elsewhere. And
are you making progress?
Yes. And the reason why I feel that it's very important is because there are so many things in life related to fundamentalism, to exclusion, discrimination, poverty, illiteracy, violence. Again, the list is long of so many things that a sports ambassador or sports person used as an ambassador, like just like in the United Nations, they're using Nadia Comaneci, Sergei Bubka, Emerson Fittipaldi, Edwin Moses, and the list is long of so many. Yes, Arthur Ashe, and yes, all is used as ambassador. That means that they can hand or give back or
pay it forward.
Yes, pay forward so many things to younger generations, sometimes lost in today's world, where they are hooked to this social media, to this connected to this wrong and false world, and touched by obesity, laziness, and not wanting and willing to do anything. So sport is there to shake them up. And at the age almost nearly of 60, you know, I show them that you are 15 and 20, you're not even capable of doing what I'm doing today. Mm. I'm almost your grandma. So stand up, speak up, and move around. Don't be just sitting down, crying on your life and what is happening to you. So I have a message to send. I have a message to deliver. So I think it's my duty. I'm not paid for it. It's free, and I do it with love, again, with passion and determination. It's part of me. It's in my DNA.
We were at the Fez Medina, which not too long ago celebrated 1,200-year anniversary, which in itself is hard to even fathom, considering I'm from the United States, in which, you know, we haven't been around very long.
Well, the first one to have recognized United States, Morocco, number one.
I can't get enough of this amazing relationship between Morocco and the United States, and the moments of, you know, the loyalty, basically a lot of points in history in which we've had opportunities to stand up for each other, and it's happened, which has always been, made me feel so welcome and warm to be here in Morocco.
One of the very, very first congratulation messages I got via Telegram, 1984, was from your ambassador in Morocco. Send it to me in my Olympic village in the States.
Wow.
It was very nice to hear.
The United States ambassador in Morocco. Sent you a telegram to a Moroccan woman in United States
yes.
who just won a gold medal
yes.
representing Morocco in the U.S.
And he also, as soon as I returned back home, he organized for a TV channel called run by one of very famous lady. Her name is Donna Di Verona.
Oh, yeah.
A famous swimmer in the United States
yeah.
Back in the 60s, who became one of my very first and best friends, Olympic
wow.
champion. She did a documentary on me with a guy called Dog. I believe this was so long ago, back in the 80s. And the documentary was called, if I'm not mistaken, 15 Days of Glory. And so she wanted... I believe it's her documentary, to bring together all the young girls called after me the day I won and the day they were born.
Wow.
And so I discovered that there were many, many, many little born girls named after me the day I won. And this event was happening because the U.S. ambassador in Morocco hosted all these little girls with this TV
who were named
crew,
after you.
Yes, in the U.S. Embassy in Morocco. So many connections.
1,200 years ago that we were talking, we showed up in Fez at the Medina, and we were told by the guide, let's go see the first university in the world located in the Medina in Fez, going back to, I believe, the 10th century, and it was started by a Moroccan woman.
Yes.
The first university in the world was started by a Moroccan woman, and her sister went across the river and started possibly a hospital or something else that was, you know, worth noting. That in itself, to me, my realization was this is obviously a culture that's always been willing to accept and embrace and empower the woman. True? Or?
It is very true. It differs from a place to place, but I have a strong feeling that everywhere you go, opportunities are given. It is up to women, like I said at the beginning, to grab them. Women in Morocco have achieved so many goals. You've just said about our university in Fez. In our religion, Islam, our prophet used to compete against his wife. She used to beat him. And then the only moment in running, in the fields. And the only time he beat her is when he discovered that she was pregnant. And then also, in our religion, it tells you that you should teach. It doesn't say teach your boys or teach your girls. It says teach your children running, swimming, and horseback riding. So I don't think our religion never said that women's place is at home, or women's place like Pierre de Coubertin should not compete. Because Pierre de Coubertin, the founder of the Olympic Games, which was only a century ago, he said the women's participation in sports is inesthetic, inappropriate, and unacceptable. This was only a century ago. And here, our prophet used to compete with his wife, no problem. I think nowadays, mentalities are opening up. You see, within our national team, for instance, that went to the Games in Rio 2016, women's representation in our team was almost across every kind of sport, even boxing. And I think this is a huge opportunity given to women compared to the past. I think it's up to us to grab every moment and live it fully and grab every opportunity.
King Hassan II, obviously, the golf tournament that comes every year to Rabat is named for him. His yes. son, Prince Moulay Rashid, is carrying the torch for his father. And one thing I know from in speaking to His Royal Highness is that it means a lot to him that he continues to stay committed to having a simultaneous event in which the European Tour plays simultaneously to the Ladies European Tour. That this means a lot to him because that was his father's wish. His father was obviously empowering, supporting, inspiring not just men, male athletes, female athletes. From what you're speaking about, this was obviously true in how he addressed the team before you left Los Angeles. Do you think he'd be proud of the accomplishments of his son and what he's trying to do in terms of not only sport in general, but specifically golf?
Oh, he would be very proud of his son that he's carrying to a higher level his dream. We see today how it is prosper. It's reaching international level with the presence of huge celebrities, famous competitors. Gary Player is a good friend of mine, and I see how highly he speaks about each time I see him about the tournament in Morocco. And we have golf fields all around the country. It is becoming a platform that everybody cherishes and everybody wants to come to and see and play and live and feel. So I think he would be very, very proud. And I wish every success to this tournament because it's becoming an international platform where everybody wishes to be part of.
Where do we go from here? Where does it all go from here? If you had a wand and instead of working tirelessly for the next 20 years, doing what you're doing and going around person to person or platform to platform or podium to podium, preaching the way you are and probably will continue to do, if you could wave a wand right now, what would be one thing you would want to get accomplished in the next two decades? What's the one thing you're focused on right now?
I want to see so many things being achieved and reached at every level, education in our country, education for everyone, boys and girls. I want to see health for everyone. Also want
does
to
that
see.
Mean, does that mean free health care? Does that mean free. Better health care? Does that mean free education?
All together.
All together.
Free and better. I want to see every Moroccan living a decent life. Every Moroccan having equal access to sports, because if you reach a good level of sports, you don't need the hospitals. You don't need the healthcare.
Because so you want to sort of elevate.
Yes.
You want to raise what is
below to the level of.
Raise the level of low, essentially.
Definitely, and I also one of my ultimate dream is to see the World Cup of soccer come to Morocco, mm-hmm. and why not the Olympic Games? Sometimes in the land of Africa, we are part of this beautiful continent. Which is part of us, and why not? It's another dream. The games went to every single continent except Africa. So hopefully one of these days, I don't know whether I will be here or I will be gone, but whatever happens, somewhere I will be happy.
Have you ever played golf?
No, never.
So you're really smart. You're obviously highly educated. Don't take up that game.
No.
It would start a lifetime of struggles and frustrations. More hurdles, go ahead and take up golf. That's for sure.
I should try sometimes. Have you ever tried the 400 hurdles?
Well, I was...
In high school?
No. Well, you know, I remember sitting on a track full of hurdles. Memory I have of hurdles, and thinking to myself, that I mean, at the elite level, they were too high. They were too high. I did jump. I rode horses and competed equestrian, a sport in which men and women, by the way, compete side by side. There is no male or female division, which is pretty amazing. But I remember thinking I would need to be on a horse to jump these hurdles. There's no way I could see myself like, you know,
stretching your legs.
Yeah, you know, doing what that movement
in which
your body. It's not like you jump them; you just.
And you need to have a very high IQ. You cannot just jump.
You have That's to why I never did the hurdles, obviously.
But you know what? Let me tell you one thing. I don't think I lied to you, but I forgot. I did some golf experience about a year or 2 years ago to celebrate the International Women's Golf. So I kind
How'd
of took
go?
Some you know some
swings
some swings and it was interesting.
How'd
interesting.
It go?
It was good.
You made
you
contact?
Know what? I have a good legacy from me running with my back, lower back hurts,
yeah.
Injury. So there are some movements I cannot do with my lower back.
Yeah,
so
it's not good yet.
No.
So if we were to line up a few hurdles right here.
I can jump.
You still think you could beat me?
Yes. You're laughing.
I'm laughing because I guarantee you would beat me, but I love
yes,
the fact that you...
Yes,
yeah,
yes, I can beat you.
Really?
Yes. Want to try?
Yeah. I mean, I've already been beat today by a Moroccan golfer. Why not be beat by a Moroccan gold medalist in the hurdles? Maybe we set up a few...
No, I'm just...
Well, I can't thank you enough. I've been on the verge of tears. I've had chills. I've laughed. I've been inspired. I'm motivated. I'm humbled. I'm honored.
Thank you too much.
So many things. I'm captivated.
Oh, thank you.
What an amazing story that you know certainly hasn't even come close to an end. So I congratulate you. I support you. If there's anything I can ever do in any way, shape, or form, I would be there. That you are you're motivating, and
thank you,
you
so
have
much.
You have a gift, not only in the Coliseum, but obviously in terms of motivation. You know, I was sharing with the crew as we were doing our research, and I was looking at a list of your accomplishments on the race and how many, you know, 15 out of 20 races that you competed in from 1982 to 1986, first place. You know, it was just, it was almost as though that day, that moment in 1984 in the Los Angeles Coliseum, just, you know, it was just one of the many things that you had won. And it was, and it seems to me that the wins just keep coming. You keep jumping the hurdles. You keep pulling everybody, you know, with you as you cross these finish lines. You keep surrounding yourself with other hurdlers. And the world is a better place because of people like you. So thank you.
Oh, thank you so much. It's all about PMA, positive mental attitude. This is what I tell myself every day. I wake up. Think positive, aim high, and reach, or aim big and reach high, whatever.
All
the time. Every morning when I wake up, I don't have negative ideas, negative thoughts, so I just keep moving forward. But I wanted to say thank you for loving my country, Morocco. Oh. It is your country. Thank you for doing this special, and sorry for making you come all the way down here.
This has been a real treat. We've had an amazing week. We've seen some amazing places. We've spoken to a lot of amazing people. We've ate a lot of great food. But this is kind of the most amazing way to finish it all off. So thank you.
Thank you. Thank you.